The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
Hello and welcome to Grace in Focus. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thank you for joining us. We're currently in a series called His Unseen Hand. It's an autobiography by Dr. Bob Wilkin. Today, we're going to find out a little bit about what Bob was like between the ages of 6 and 14. Hard to imagine, I know, but I think you'll find it quite the treat. Let's go right to today's episode with Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. Here's Grace in Focus.
All right, so I'm talking to Bob. We started a new series based on his upcoming autobiography, His Unseen Hand. In the last episode, we talked about ages from birth till about age 14.
Right.
Where you grew up in a household that was sometimes Serbian Orthodox, maybe a little bit more often United Methodist, and then they sent you to a sports league, Boys Christian League, which turns out to be really part of extreme holiness movement.
I mean, they were so extreme, and they taught sinless perfection.
Wow. So in other sinless words, yeah.
Once you were born again, if you were lucky enough to turn from enough sins and to commit your life to Christ, and then your hour came and you were able to go forward and get saved, if you committed one sin after the new birth, you lost your salvation and couldn't get it back.
Wow. So what did that do to your emotional? Were you young enough to think, I can make it? Or were you at that time thinking to yourself, I'm never going to make it. I'm toast.
I had both feelings. I had the thought that I'm going to try my best, but I'm scared to death. I'm going to spend eternity in hell, because we did a lot of teaching scaring the boys about hell, and I was certainly afraid of it and believed in it, but I really didn't have a good idea of what you need to do to escape it. I knew you had to turn from your sins. I knew you had to clean up your life. I know you had to follow Christ.
And you had to bring a couple boys home to home base, right?
Yeah.
You need to make a triple and a home run.
Oh, I see what
you
mean.
Is that part of
it?
Because it's a sports league,
exactly.
Right?
I was a good tackler. So. Yeah, no, it didn't have to do with your sports prowess.
Oh, okay, that's good. So they didn't. Yeah. At least they didn't ruin sports for you.
No.
You still love sports.
Yeah, I do. So anyway, that was between about ages 6 and 14. And after 6th grade, I went on a trip, a 6-week trip around the United States. We played baseball around the states and had religious instruction every day.
Okay.
And then after 8th grade, I went on another trip for 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And had religious instruction every day. And I remember the second time, I was praying every night. I'd try to stay up and just keep praying, God save me, God save me, God save me. Could this be my time?
Yeah.
And they had taught us you'd have some kind of a feeling that would tell you you were saved.
Okay.
So I kept looking for that feeling. I kept inviting Jesus into my heart because they had said something like you invite him in. This normally happened in a worship service, but it didn't have to be.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, well, I'll just do this while we're on the trip. And I kept praying and looking for that feeling and not really having it. And then I got back from the trip and everything changed.
Before we get to that, so between 6 and 14, I'm curious, you never went to the front? I mean, did you ever, that's 8 years, so you never did whatever it is that they required you to do that they said if you do this, you're going
right.
to be saved?
As far as
you
I know.
You were too afraid to do that or what?
No, I don't remember a single boy doing that. Well, of course, we didn't have, until I was in about high school, they didn't have, I don't think, Sunday worship, but if they did, I couldn't go anyway.
So there's no sinners, there's no invitation to say a sinner's prayer or to...
It's funny you mention that. We did, when we went on these 6-week trips, we would on Sunday go to various holiness churches.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure they must have had altar calls. But again, see, we were told you couldn't just gin this up and go forward.
Right.
If you did, you'd be jeopardizing your soul.
So you never went forward in those 8 years.
I kept waiting for the right feeling to tell me to go forward, you know, or the right. So, yeah, no, I never did.
Who was Jesus to you during that time? What did you think about Jesus?
Well, I had an Orthodox view that he died on the cross for his sins, that he rose bodily from the dead on the third day, that he's the second member of the Trinity. We were Trinitarian.
Yeah.
And that Jesus loved me. Although Jesus was going to judge me, I definitely had no concept of eternal rewards. I think I believe the Great White Throne Judgment was it, and we'd all be evaluated by our works there. And if you were truly saved, well, you'd be sinless from the time of faith
Yeah.
So the time you went to be with the Lord.
So was Jesus someone that you wanted to be with? Is he someone, I mean, what was it?
No, Jesus was part of the process.
Uh-huh.
But I really wasn't concerned about being with God or being with Jesus, mm-hmm. being in heaven, being in the kingdom. I just wanted to avoid eternal torment.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have eternal joy. And if that's through Jesus, great. No, at that point, I really didn't have a concept of love for Jesus because my view was basically God was angry. Like some of the people in the group were pretty angry, and yeah. I thought that God was angry and that I just wanted to be on his good side.
And when I hear you talk about an angry father, I immediately think about your father and then your childhood. And
my dad was very angry.
And that was not an easy childhood for
and
you.
The leader of this group was very angry, and some of his sons were very angry. So, yeah, I was used to a hostile environment. Give you an idea, on that second trip we had, what we did was when we would pull up to, let's say, a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
well, there were 36 boys as well as 9 leaders. And so we had 45 people, and we couldn't all just rush to the bathroom at any one place, because if we did, well, none of the patrons would get to go there.
Sure.
So what we would do is, I guess it was the first leader would go, and then he would come back and tap the first boy, and he would go. And then he would tap the second leader, and he would, and then it came down to the 9th boy, and then from there on it was the rest of the boys. And this also affected when we got to eat. If we were like at a Dairy Queen, we'd line up according to our number.
Yeah.
And it was also, wasn't too subtle, this was also our likelihood of going to heaven. Like, you know, the top 4 boys were the ones that had the best shot. Well, I was number 34, 34 of 36. You know, the funny thing was, all 4 of us in this bottom group were either children of alcoholics or children of dysfunctional families, children that had a lot of issues in the home life.
Yeah.
This wasn't a way to inculcate positive feelings on the part of any of the boys that were on the lower half of this spectrum.
You kind of felt like you were the unclean part of the group? Or what?
This week, wherever we go anywhere, we would cry out, unclean, unclean.
At 14, 6 to 14, you're in this boys' league. Something changes.
Right. When I get back, I get home. I'm so thrilled because they've got a high school now, and I could play tackle football in their high school. They had 8-man football and baseball and basketball, and I do all the, and my mom and dad set me down, and they say, well, you know, you've been doing this and had a great time, and it's been great, but now it's time for you to get in the public schools.
Okay.
You're entering 9th grade. This will be your last year of junior high school, and we want you to start doing baseball, basketball, and football in your junior high and then on into high school.
Oh, okay. So instead of doing private sports, you were going to do school-related sports. Okay.
And you won't be involved in them at all.
Ah, okay.
And I was like, well, no, you can't do that because
you're jeopardizing my chance
I'll
of going to heaven.
I'll go to hell if you do that. They're no, that's nuts. So they told me you're not going. And so I remember I had a club meeting. I can't remember. Let's say it was Monday or Tuesday. And mm-hmm. I got home from school, and I told my mom I'm going to club meeting. And she said, well, your dad told you you're not going. And I said, well, I need to obey God.
Oh, wow.
So I rode my bike down 2 miles or whatever. I'm in the club meeting. About 45 minutes to an hour later, somebody taps me on the shoulder and says, your dad's standing at the door. And my dad's standing there with the veins on his neck, you know, mm-hmm. popping and looking. Mm-hmm. And my dad was 6'4 and about 220, so he was rather imposing.
Mm-hmm.
He said, get in the car. Mm-hmm. So we got my bike and stuck it in the back of his car, and we drove home, and he said, you won't come here again. From then until the time I graduated from high school, I would sneak down there maybe once every week or two with a friend of mine, John Carlson. He and I had both been in the group. And I was forced to quit. John still was a part of the group for a while, and then later he also quit because his parents made him. But I still thought there was only salvation there, so I expected that after I graduated from college, I'd be a leader there.
Where were you going to church during this time?
Well, I would go to United Methodist Church with my father.
Okay.
I remember when I was in 9th grade, I remember walking across my junior high campus, and I said, God, make me a zombie so I can obey you perfectly.
Oh,
and I think I use the term zombie
uh-huh.
because I had the view that I couldn't attain perfection on my own. I wasn't getting there.
Yeah.
And so then when I was about 16, I was home and I was reading the Bible an hour a day during those years in high school. And I remember I prayed and invited Jesus in. I had some feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, maybe I'm born again.
Mm.
And this was to come back as an issue later on when I was in college and ultimately met with a Campus Crusade staff member and talk about that experience.
Okay.
I continued to go through high school not knowing if I was born again, not knowing where I was going when I died, kind of hoping I was perfect,
mm-hmm.
but looking at my life going, it doesn't seem perfect.
Right.
As a result of this group, they taught us to beware the dogs, they'll lead you to hell.
Yeah.
So I didn't do any more basketball, baseball, football. I didn't do...
Oh, man.
No dating, almost no friends other than people that had been in Boys Christian League.
Yeah.
And the only sports I did, second semester of my senior year, I needed the last period PE class, so I ran track one semester. And I did debate and extemp in ninth grade and 12th grade, and that's not exactly sports. It was kind of fun.
So why debate but not sports? Why is one incompatible with holiness but not the other?
They probably both were, but I just kind of felt like I had to do something.
Yeah.
And I had a competitive desire. My mom was pushing me towards speech because she knew I'd probably be in some sort of a field where I'd be doing, like maybe a lawyer or something.
Right. Well, it's a good example of how subjective legalism is. You're supposed to beware of the dogs. You can't do sports, but you can do debate team. Doesn't really make any sense, does it?
Well, I wasn't supposed to go to public school, but I didn't have a choice.
You didn't have a choice.
And yeah, you're right. The legalism did not make sense. But God used all that both to lead me toward Grace Evangelical Society and toward speaking and lots of things.
Well, that's the title of your upcoming book, His Unseen Hand. And we haven't talked about how God is working through all these events in your younger life, but I think we will.
And yeah.
So, hey, it's a little change for us. But as I was saying, I think biography is one of the best ways to teach living theology. That's why we're doing this. And it's also just interesting to hear about other people's experiences. So keep on listening, and we'll bring you the next chapter of Bob's life in the next episode.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Would you like to learn more from Dr. Bob and Sean and the other guests that we have on this show? If so, you can do exactly that by going to faithalone.org. That's faithalone.org. It's packed with all kinds of materials that are designed to help you grow and mature in your faith and your understanding of Scripture. A great example is our daily blog posts. You can get signed up for free, and every day a new post will show up in your inbox. Go to faithalone.org. This radio show is made possible from the generous donations of listeners just like you. If you'd like to become a financial partner with this show, you can go to faithalone.org and find out exactly how to do just that. Do you have a question for Sean or Bob? I know that I've often had questions for them. If you do, I want to give you our email address so that you can reach out to us to ask that burning question. It's radio@faithalone.org. radio@faithalone.org. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to get into the 70s and the college life. So, join us for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The preceding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.